And we're back. I'm Michelle Hager, managing partner of Lucier's Consulting in South Carolina, and we have our second guest, which I'm happy to introduce. This is Dr. Jonathan Neufeld, who is the director of the Great Plains Telehealth Resource Center. And we're doing a preview of all of the resource centers on this show today. This resource center represents, as it says in the name, the Great Plains Resource Center. So I'm happy to have you on the show, Dr. Neufeld. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Michelle.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on the show. We love sharing information on this show with our listeners about telehealth in particular. And we talked to Lloyd just a few minutes ago about the Resource Center in the Southeast. We love to talk about telehealth and educate our listeners on healthcare, telehealth topics, and lots of different things and innovation that may be happening in the industry or current news that people may need to know about. So I know that the in the name it says the Great Plains, but talk to us a little bit about where you cover, the states that you cover in your area, and the types of projects that you're working on.
Sure. Yeah, there's a little bit of history in the names, and it goes back to when the TRCs were formed. They actually originally there were only six of them, and HRSA Oat at the time put out a NOFO, and groups applied, and then over time we just kind of groups came along and claimed some states and traded some states at some point, and so we ended up with the states that we have. But we our great, what we call Great Plains, is kind of northern Great Plains. Sometimes we get even called the Great Lakes region, but it's in short, what I say is Minnesota and everything that surrounds it, which includes North and South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, and Wisconsin. So those six states are our focus area. What we do, and this is true for all of the telehealth resource centers, though we are a very diverse group. There are 14 of us altogether, but what we do, where there are 12 regionals, we're one of the regionals. And what the regionals do is we keep tabs on policy and telehealth programs in our region, try and connect the dots for folks, provide sort of baseline introductions to telehealth, work with safety net and rural and underserved providers who serve rural and underserved folks. Helping them establish, evaluate, sustain, and expand telehealth programs of all kinds across the gamut. I'm a clinical psychologist, and so we at GP Track focus a bit on telebehavioral health, a bit more than maybe the other resource centers, simply because of my interests. But all of us have various emphases that we focus on based on, you know, where we exist and what skill sets we bring to the domain.
Very interesting. And I'm sure given the Plains area, you have quite a few people that are interested. We've talked a lot on this show about how rural areas and those that are underserved, as you mentioned, have trouble accessing specialist care, and telehealth is a perfect way to do that. And we know that there's some unsureness right now because of the end of the public health emergency. We've talked a little bit about that with our listeners, but I think it's important for folks to understand that with the changes that are happening in the public health emergency, that means that there are some significant changes happening in the telehealth space in terms of how folks are going to be reimbursed, which has a direct impact on the rural areas that you may cover in the Great Plains, as well as others for a lot of different areas. And in fact, Lloyd spoke in our last interview about the DEA proposed changes that we're all thinking about. Talk to us about how you're helping your region understand those changes, keep abreast of those changes, and any advice and guidance that you might provide.
You know, the one of the things that comes up, I think, fairly commonly, and that we try and help people get a grasp on, is that, and I say this all the time, telehealth isn't one thing. And in fact, telehealth reimbursement isn't one thing, and telehealth regulation isn't one thing. There are multiple levels and multiple kind of interacting regulatory domains. And so when we talk about things changing for telehealth at the end of the PHE, what we mostly mean is that federal regulations are changing and the way Medicare pays for telehealth is changing. Most of the states, all the states in my region, and most states ended their PHEs a while ago. And so a lot of that cross-state licensing stuff that's up to the states got rescinded. And most Medicaid agencies, which is the other major public payer, have, at least in my region, and I think across the country, it's probably fair to say, have developed their, if you will, post-PHE approach to telehealth. A lot of them expanded. A lot of them changed some things. They recognized some new codes, some new providers. They did whatever they're going to do. And they have more or less made those changes permanent as much as anything is permanent. I mean, regulatory issues change from time to time. So when we talk about the end of the PHE, we just want to make sure that we're not saying, oh my goodness, everything is changing.
Right.
Medicare is changing and federal regulations. And so helping people understand that. And to the extent that they're that they do Medicare business, of course, you got to be aware of that. And the other two things, I mean, there are three big things that are changing. One is Medicare, one is the DEA, and one is OCR and HIPAA regulations. Yep. Those are all the federal level changes. And so you got to be aware of, you know, if you're using a non-HIPAA compliant platform, obviously fix that.
Right.
If you are doing a lot of prescribing of controlled substances, especially if you're doing substance abuse work, then be aware of what the DEA changes mean. And there are some changes that pretty significant ones there. And I don't think we're done with those yet.
Nope.
We have yet to see the final rule and there could be some movement there. So everyone's looking at that, watching.
Any minute now, as a matter of fact.
What's that?
Any minute now.
Any minute now. Right, right. which is part of what makes telehealth so great and so crazy at the same time. Because it's like, yeah, it's not true. It was true last week. Now it's not true anymore. But anyway, those two changes. But then the third major one, of course, is how Medicare reimburses. And interestingly enough, too, even that's just not one story, because the substance use and mental health, the behavioral health domain, there were a lot of permanent changes that happened in the middle of the PHE that are continuing in a permanent way. Mental health is covered differently at FQHCs now, or at least it's regulated differently at FQHCs and RHCs now than it was. The patient's home as an originating site is different now in telebehavioral health services. So, and then there's a lot that's been extended. All of those Medicare reimbursement core services have been extended now for till the end of 2024,
yes.
With a few little nooks and crannies where it's different, and that causes some anxiety. But by and large, the meat and potatoes, I mean, the big stuff is out till 2024. So at least we have a runway there to be making adjustments and, you know, making some plans.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a good point that the government did think ahead, which doesn't always happen in the government. They did think ahead and extended a lot of these changes through 2024 to give themselves and healthcare an off-ramp or ramp up time, to give them time to analyze what had happened during the COVID pandemic and also what the needs are. And so they are collecting actively data to determine what has happened during that time. How did people use telehealth? How should they use telehealth? And I would add to your comment there about the states, not only have the states sort of already in their PHEs, the majority of them, and I think all of them at this point certainly have ended for the state level, but each of those states has made a thoughtful analysis of the telehealth usage in their state and either, as you mentioned, kept regulation the way it was or changed it slightly. But in addition, I see now they're doing, quite a few states are doing some analyses of their state telehealth programs and what they should do. Cause there's this whole, you know, we don't want to use too much jargon, but the whole idea of parity of payment, right? So parity of payment, meaning that you should get paid the same as you should get paid for a face-to-face visit. As you mentioned, home being a valid site for mental health services. So these are the kinds of things that we see the government doing, which is a good thing. And I know that as a HRSA-funded organization, you are not permitted to lobby per se or advocate on behalf of your members or the folks that are existing in your states, but the education that you're providing is really getting to the core of that to help organizations understand exactly what is happening. And all the TRCs are doing that. And I know that you've got a big education session coming up here in May, on May 23rd and 24th in Minneapolis. I know you love to do this at the Mall of America, which is a great location for that session. Talk to us about this program, who should attend, and the types of things that you are educating the public on.
Sure. We and a number of TRCs do conferences like this, and all of us have thought about this quite a bit. What is our role in the telehealth space? There it seems like, you know, telehealth conferences have kind of sprouted like mushrooms across the country in the last couple of years, and they're all looking at different niches and different ways of promoting telehealth. And I think it's partly because there's a lot of demand for understanding. What we try and do, and I think this is true across all TRCs, what we try and do is, number one, provide a very regional focus. Now, what's going on in our region? It's not that people from outside our region can't come. We'd love to have you.
Yeah.
But we want to highlight programs that are going on, you know, in our region. And closely related with that is get those folks talking to each other. Because we have found over the years, telehealth programs, by and large, at least at the operational level, they love to connect with each other and figure out, okay, how are you solving this problem? What are you doing about this? What are you thinking? You know, when May 11th comes, how are you going to change? They love to talk about that with each other. And we want to promote that, be a sort of a convener of those sorts of experiences. And then related to that, we focus, the TRC conferences focus on the operational level. So although we want to expose attendees to, you know, what's coming in the future, what are the technologies and the development there, what are some cool things in the startup space, that's all interesting and we need to be aware of that. But our conferences are not primarily focused on technology or primarily focused on the startup space. They're primarily focused on operations. How do you run a telehealth program? What do you need to know? What do you need to do? What are best practices? How do you make that run smoothly? Granted, you know, what's coming and all the regulatory things you have to be aware of and what you might have access to in terms of technologies and companies and services and whatnot out there in the space. So across that, you know, across the telehealth domain, which is huge and growing, we try and have a pretty clear regional and operational focus that can be really of use to existing programs that are doing telehealth and trying to do it better.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do a great job. All the TRCs do a great job with that. I think that you made a good point around best practice. This is an important element in telehealth because it is a new and innovative way of practicing medicine. And it's disruptive. There's no question about it because it's new. That in that way, we need to make sure that people are doing it the right way. And we had so many, and I've said this before, so many little minions that were out there doing telehealth during COVID that just sort of sprung up out of nowhere. They weren't doing telehealth before. And so for those of us like you and the GP track and the other TRCs and the folks at Blue Cirrus that we've been doing telehealth for quite some time, we need to help them understand the best way to do telehealth and to help them miss those roadblocks that we felt and went over, 5, 10 years ago, or maybe even longer, because we know that telehealth has actually been a lot around for quite a bit of time, decades, as a matter of fact, but most people think of it as it just popped up new.
Yeah, we find in our conference, and I don't know, I haven't asked the other TRCs about this, but I'm sure they would be similar. We every year, about 50% of the people who come to our conference are new to telehealth. And I think that speaks to the fact that the field continues to grow, continues to expand, and continues to have turnover. You know, somebody leaves, somebody comes in, and we got a new director, we got a new manager. Get to this conference and get yourself oriented about what's out there. Because when you first, as you know, when you first come into a domain, you think, oh, this is new. And it's helpful to connect with people who've been here a while and think, okay, yeah, this, there's a lot that's changed, but you know what? The way things are going back to after the PHE, we've been there before. A lot of it, it's not like all of a sudden, no, this is a tragedy. Although, I mean, it should be changed. Some things, it'd be great to have them changed, but it's not like it's brand new.
Yeah, prior to the pandemic, I had a conversation with someone in the telehealth industry, and we talked about the fact that in about 5 years, everyone will know what we know, and it will be over. But the pandemic really just like shot that through you know, through a cannon, and everybody sort of caught up in a quick way, which is a good thing. And now we need to reach that next space. And not to throw you off, but here's a kind of next space question. I know that you know, people are looking at an artificial intelligence and machine learning to work in healthcare. And I wondered your thoughts around that, because telehealth certainly is a way that I think we could potentially apply artificial intelligence in some fashion, but want to know your thoughts on that.
You know, I was just, so I have a different set of comments for the future of telehealth in general that I want to address at some point, but I'll address AI specifically. I was just talking with somebody the other day who has been around the telebehavioral health space for a long time and talks to a lot of people. And this person pointed out to me something that I hadn't really considered. It's something that echoes something that I heard from a state government in my region as we went to telehealth and audio only. And the state government folks had noticed that audio only was being used much more commonly for less for folks with less access. Less technology access, less healthcare access. And they kind of went to the position of, ooh, is this like substandard care for people who don't have access? We should restrict that. And I think over time, what we realized in looking more closely at that data is that actually it's that people need access. They have different lifelines for access when they can't have in-person care. And in-person care is a challenge for a lot of folks across the continuum. For somebody, it's like, you know, dang, I have to get in my car and drive 20 minutes. For someone else, it's like, I don't have a car. I got to get on a bus and drive 40 and ride 45, 50 minutes across town. And, you know, all of this arranged for my job and my kids and all that. So access issues are different for different people. And that audio only was a lifeline for a certain segment of the population. And it happens to coincide with the folks who don't have access to a lot of other things too,
right?
Healthcare, transportation, technology, a phone call works. And so, in a similar way, and getting around now to the AI question, what this person, highly experienced person, had said is, you know, what about a future? Is this a good or a bad thing? What about a future where cheap behavioral health is Eliza plus, you know, Eliza's the old, you know, original kind of an AI therapist is cheap behavioral health. And then if you want to pay for it, if you got a little extra, if you're a little better well healed, better covered, then you get a person and you can actually work with a therapist. And that was a little dystopic to think about. And we also know that remarkably, maybe unremarkably, it didn't surprise me that much, people can develop meaningful emotional attachments with automated interlocutors with an AI and develop insights and change and grow. I mean, there's a lot of positive things that can happen just with a linguistic interplay of words. So there's benefit there. I think we have a lot of thinking to do, a lot of conceptualizing to do around, is it okay to do that with an AI, or is it some sort of slight, some sort of insult, some sort of, you know, put off to say, you know, talk to the AI, and then, you know, if and when you decide to harm yourself, then we'll talk to you. I mean, that could have all kinds of perverse incentives. So we got to be thinking about some of that.
Yeah, I think we have a little bit to go in that space. And I think, you know, it's true. There've been movies on this that people can create, you know, meaningful relationships with folks that's meaningful, certainly to them, in the way that they communicate with an artificial intelligence being, per se, whatever that looks like. It's interesting because there's some grappling. I feel like it's a little bit of the grappling that we had with healthcare around DNA when we started to, you know, get access and be able to map the DNA genomes and things like that. And the same types of grapplings that we're doing with, you know, the idea of cloning, which, you know, is great when you're trying to get an organ transplant, because you need one. And so maybe that's the direction we go. We think it's going to, you know, cloning an entire person, or we think it's going to AI with everyone sort of communicating just with a pretend computer, you know, artificial intelligence, but maybe it's going in a different direction. And there's some little, there's some thoughts there. And we do have a little bit of work to do in healthcare.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to expand the conversation a little bit in the conceptual space around that, people can develop, research has shown people developing emotional, and this is, these are not deep relationships,
right,
but at least missing that person that was reminding them about their health behavior goals, whether it's, you know, stopping smoking or stopping drinking or exercising, whatever, just a kind of cheerful, positive message that comes automatically by a script onto their phone.
Yep.
For several weeks. And when that's over, it's like, oh yeah, it was kind of nice to get those.
I appreciated that.
And so, you know, it's not like I want to fall in love with this text message
right.
string, but it's like, yes, you can get a positive message can be emotionally uplifting regardless of where
it is. And is it fair to say, given your background, Dr. Neufeld, is it fair to say that if someone is doing talk therapy, that some of that is them coming to realizations themselves as well through that type of reminder behavior? Yes.
And at its core, a lot of the therapeutic aspects, and once you get into the therapeutic aspects of psychotherapy, there's a lot of sort of theoretical and schools come at it from various perspectives. But I would say it's not unfair to say that a lot of what is therapeutic about a therapeutic relationship, clinical relationship, is that a relationship with somebody who can retain a positive, encouraging role in your life without getting wrapped up into other types of dynamics that might exist as well. And which is what every other relationship in your life is prone to. You know, we end up getting into relationships and not being able to benefit from them as much as we could because other things, whether it's work or family or stresses or whatever. And so a therapeutic relationship is a place where you cultivate an insulation from a lot of that stuff and focus on, you know, the positive things that you can do and learn and develop in a relationship. So there is a big part of that. Yeah.
We'll need to have you back on the show to talk just about that, Dr. Neufeld. That was very interesting. And I wanted to point out when you were talking a little bit about access and using audio only versus video, which has been kind of the more accepted version of telehealth, if you will, like a Zoom call type of thing. One of the things that we point out is with for clients, because the FCC and folks probably know this in rural areas that you cover and urban areas that you cover, the FCC has defined, you know, the accessibility of broadband at a sufficient level at, you know, pretty high percentages based on the fact that there's reporting from the cell phone coverage companies and the cable companies. Yep, we've covered that area. If we have one person that's got it in a zip code, then yep, we've covered that entire area. And folks that are in rural areas know that's not true. We tend to rely more on some data that is around the usability of the broadband access or cellular level data to show whether or not there is actual usage at that level. Because even though you may have, you know, 1 gig line available to you or whatever it is, you may not be paying for that level of service, or you may not be paying for any service at all. So even though it's available to you, I think that's important for folks to understand. And I'm guessing that in the rural areas, you've spent quite a bit of time. I know certainly in the technology reviews, we look at, you know, whether or not this technology is going to be too much for, we want something to be simple, right? Something that's easily accessible. So I don't know if you have some thoughts on that and what your members have experienced in terms of variability of service because of technology lacking in the area.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things that I think the pandemic helped us learn too,
yes,
is that those lines that we kind of knew existed out there at the edge of who we could connect with became very clearly drawn. I talked with at least one health system, fairly large health system, that said, yeah, we could look at our call logs and the zip codes and addresses and know exactly where coverage ended, you know. So we had better insight into that than at least what we could get from websites, company websites and such. I guess, you know, it's universal almost with telehealth companies, telehealth programs, anyone in the world of telehealth to think about connectivity, and because it's an issue. I talk about the rails that telehealth rides on. One of them is healthcare access and the other one is technology access. And without both rails, you can't really do much telehealth. Yep. And both of those are inequitably distributed already in the population. So the fact that telehealth is not quite equitably distributed is no real fault of telehealth. It's the fault of the rails that it's riding on. But beyond that, I guess my fundamental, and this is a little more my own personal idea, but I have been really disappointed in our tardiness to and our reluctance to use the U word when it comes to telehealth and technology specifically. There was a time when electric lights was fancy and you showed off your electric lights.
Yes.
Now we all have them. There was a time when indoor plumbing was a luxury and now we all have it. When is connectivity going to be a utility? When are we going to start thinking about it like a utility? And a utility is like, not that, oh, you could probably get it if you worked hard enough out there in rural county America. Rather, there's a pipe at the sidewalk. There's a pipe at the edge of your property. There's a connection right there. And your responsibility as a homeowner or as a renter or whatever, property owners, to get to the edge of your property rather than get 10 miles across a rugged mountain to you know, the urban center. So until we make that switch and we keep thinking about, you know, connectivity as a service and a luxury that you know most Americans can afford, like a car, like a vacation, 2-week vacation or whatever, we're not really talking about something that we can deliver healthcare consistently over.
I think you're absolutely right. This is we sometimes call this the smartest show on radio. And this is exactly why, because people need to start thinking about this as a utility. This is not about streaming Netflix or HBO Max or whatever it is that you're watching. This is about accessibility to information, accessibility to healthcare, and connection to your social and family across in emergencies and things like that. These are necessary utilities that I'm with you on that, Dr. Neufeld. I really appreciate it. And it's been great to have you on the show tonight. We need to have you on again to talk more about psychotherapy and your area that you practice in. So thank you so much for your time today. As we talked about, we always want to share helpful information around healthcare and telehealth on this show. And this has been a great show for that. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on. If you want more information about GP Track and the organization that Dr. Neufeld is part of, please reach out to him and at GP, P as in Paul, Track, TRAC.org. That's GPTrack.org. And you can see where their event is happening later in the month of May, and reach out to the other professionals that work at GP Track. Thank you so much for being here tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Michelle.
It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. We'll be right back with our next guest on Blue Cirrus Telehealth Radio.